What is the state of cancer care in Canada? What are we doing right, and what requires more attention? This week, the Cancer Advocacy Coalition of Canada, the CACC, released its annual report card on cancer in Canada. Authored by oncologists and cancer patients across the country, it highlights inadequacies, ills, and disconnects within the system and offers recommendations for improvements. And joining us today, I'm pleased to introduce Dr. William Herenick, medical oncologist and past president of the Cancer Advocacy Coalition of Canada. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Barry.
What are the long-term goals for these specific reports?
We're trying to get the best treatment for the greatest number of patients and the best quality of life and the best prevention practices across the country, including screening. In other words, we're looking for optimum cancer control in the present state of our knowledge.
Now, within the country, there are various standards of care, frankly, for prevention, for treatments. Certain medications are approved, others are not approved for use in various provinces. And can you tell us what the principal areas of focus were for this particular report? Did it cover these specific areas?
Yeah, we looked at organized screening. We looked at better access to PET scans. We looked at innovations to reduce waiting times. We looked at better access to cancer drugs, and we looked at ways to reduce the costs of cancer drugs.
Now, with regard to PET scans, for our listeners, what is the function of the PET scans? What do they offer the cancer patient?
A PET scan is a specialized form of imaging that detects live tumor. Tumors are greedy for sugar, more than normal tissues, and the PET scan detects a tissue that uses much more sugar than normal tissues. And in somebody who's got cancer, that's almost always a cancer focus. The PET scan, when combined with a CT scan, is a very good instrument for finding out where the tumor is, how big it is, and whether it's live or not. Tumors can be treated, and they turn into fibrous scar tissue, and they're no longer live, and they're no longer a concern. So you can't just tell, looking at a CAT scan or an MRI, whether a lump is a live tumor or a dead tumor. But with a PET scan, you can tell.
And how easy is it in Canada to access these particular scans?
It depends entirely on where you live. Only two provinces, Alberta and Quebec, have the number of PET scanners and access to PET scan that we would consider by international standards adequate. Every other province is well behind. But for an example, Ontario allows six PET scans per year per 100,000 people. The normal should be around 200.
Mm-hmm.
So for every person in Ontario who gets a PET scan, 30 people in Quebec and Alberta get a PET scan.
And when using these scans, there is evidence to show that the use of these scans does help in terms of survival and treatment for patients.
Well, in 62% of cases where the PET scan has been done, it has changed the treatment. Either you go from radiation to chemotherapy or chemotherapy to radiation, or you cancel surgery because you've found disease outside the surgical field. And that makes huge differences to over half of cancer patients undergoing treatment. Now, they're also being used to monitor treatment. So you can tell within the first several weeks of a treatment with chemotherapy, say, whether the tumor is going to respond or not using serial PET scans far earlier than you can by other clinical means. It makes a huge difference in many cases.
And I guess as an extension of that, if you're using these scans and it leads you to change your treatment, obviously you want to have available the various medications to be able to treat these people. So, and that moves us to sort of the next part of this report, was the access to newer cancer medications. And what did you find in those? What is the discrepancies across the country?
Well, basically, there's a great cancer continental divide. West of the continental divide, which is just outside Winnipeg, the western provinces have better organized screening, better PET scanning, better reduced waiting times, and much better access to cancer drugs. For example, if we looked at the average number of cancer drugs fully funded, west, from Manitoba west, it was 16 out of the 24, whereas in the east it was 7. There was fewer barriers to drug access, individual barriers. People couldn't get them because of the wrong age or they lived in the wrong place. The average barrier was 8 in the west and 24 average barriers per province in the east. There were more self-pay options within the public system and fewer private infusion clinics in the west. So all in all, the western provinces come out very well compared to the eastern provinces. And of course, these are life-saving drugs. They do make a difference. The bottom line, the cancer deaths per 100,000 people, the last time we measured it, 180 per 100,000 in the west, 206 per 100,000 in the eastern provinces.
Why this discrepancy? Why is there such a difference west and east?
We think, from the basis of the research that we've done for the last 3 years prior to this year's report card, that it's the dollars spent per capita in each province by the government to giving its cancer agency money and support. It's really basically how much effort and how much dollars the provinces spend on cancer control, pure and simple.
And what about prevention and screening? There does not seem to be a standard across the country with respect to screening various cancers that we do know. There are certain screening evaluations that do work very well.
Yeah, good point. There are two diseases for which screening has been shown, three diseases actually, cervix cancer with a Pap test, breast cancer with a mammogram, and now colon cancer with fecal occult blood testing. When it comes to breast cancer screening, again, the West comes up with the closest approximation to the target for the women aged 50 to 69. 51% of the target is reached, 51% are screened every 2 years, whereas in the eastern provinces, only 41%. And the province of Ontario, again, comes out low man at 26% of the target being screened. So it's a question of the organization of the screening programs and how well the women respond to the prompting for screening.
Mm-hmm.
For fecal occult blood testing, three provinces, two in the west and one in here, Ontario, have just said that they're going to have fecal occult blood testing. But we at the Cancer Advocacy Coalition take a dim view of that.
Mm-hmm.
We think that it's going to fail. It's going to be very hard to get people to come in and with fecal specimens. We think that colon cancer, which is what we're trying to prevent deaths from, is better prevented by more exercise and less red meat. That's really the way to go with colon cancer.
In fact, there was a study that is to be released, I think, this month from the Moores Cancer Center at the University of California that showed that vitamin D levels as well, there seems to be an association with vitamin D levels and the incidence of colon cancer and breast cancer.
So, that's right. That's absolutely right. So that more attention to prevention of colon cancer could easily pay dividends. The other thing I should mention, that people who have had colon cancer, have had it resected and then get adjuvant chemotherapy to prevent recurrence, if they exercise up to 18 met hours per week, and we can define that if you want, but basically it's 1 hour of brisk walking 6 days a week, reduce their chances of recurrence by 50%.
That makes the lifestyles and the dietary choices, I think, make a huge difference in how people...
In breast cancer, a subset of women who lower their fat content of their diet to 20 grams per day have a reduced incidence of death by, recurrence by 40%. These are much more powerful changes than we can get with any treatment that we have at the moment. Nobody's doing this. Nobody's promoting this on an organized fashion.
Right. So on the basis of this, is this one of the areas that you believe requires urgent attention that in terms of promoting this? And from your study and from the report, what else do you believe requires urgent attention to get things on track?
Well, these drugs are, we think, more research to see why people don't comply or adhere to screening, more research to see why people don't pick up the lifestyle changes that I've just outlined. And one of our issues was the cost of the drugs. They're terribly expensive, but they're very effective in some people, but not all. And we think that research money should be spent in identifying the minority of patients who respond to the drugs, and so we don't have to spend as much money treating everybody. We can just treat the ones who need it. That kind of research is really underfunded and ignored.
Dr. Hrinek, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us today. Informative discussion, and hopefully people will take something home from this and understand that you can do screening, you can do treatments, but there are things that they can do in their lives today that will really reduce their risk of cancer.
Thank you, Barry, and carry on the good work.
Thanks a lot. All the best.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye now. Dr. William Hrinek is medical oncologist and past president of the Cancer Advocacy Coalition of Canada. Coming up, are medications directly responsible, prescription medications directly responsible for increased healthcare costs in Canada? I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call.